You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 586 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Seth Miller and Mr. Fosma Moon, not in a moving car.
No, very much sitting still.
Not this week.
If I could just get off this LA freeway.
Yeah. couple folks, just so you guys know, a couple people did reach out to us after that episode came up, inviting you to lunches and such and buying you beers at breweries. So if we did this thing where we actually like planned and told our listeners where and when we would be, we could hang out with them more.
Well, I think the problem with San Diego for us was it was like a moving target. Like I was going to San Diego. I did some work and I literally got on a plane last minute and went to Vegas. Like,
yeah.
And so that I saw the notes. Thank you for inviting us. It would have been awesome. Next time we will give more notice if we're going to actually be in the area. Like we slept. Where were we? We were in Irvine, right?
Newport Beach. Technically.
Newport Beach. So we slept in Newport Beach. We woke up and we drove to San Diego. Like it was very. I don't think people would have liked hanging out with us after, before or after.
Well, yeah, let's be real. We had no idea what we were doing.
We didn't. No. You took me to a good Pakistani spot, though.
Oh, yeah. It was tasty. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was really good. Was it as good as London? Debatable.
Wow.
I think it's better than London, but...
Wow. You think it's better than London? I think it's spicier than London.
Okay.
I would say Giftos is still top of my list of places to go.
But it's two different leagues, right? Giftos is more curries and stuff and less grilled meats.
This is true. Okay, fair enough.
What you order. I mean, they sell the grilled meats.
Yeah, but we just had straight grilled meat at this place. And
that's all it is grilled meat. I guess they do have like one curry on the menu.
Yes. One. Just a token.
The token. I think, let's say Tayabs. Tayabs in London. That's grilled meats, right?
Yes, Tayabs is great.
I think Tayabs maybe a little bit above the place we went. Maybe. I think I would need to compare.
The place we're talking about is called Bundukan, and it's in Fullerton, California, just 20 minutes north of Orange County Airport.
It was delicious. It was slammed till like 11:30 at night, which was crazy. That's the other thing. We never talked about it on the other show. We went to 13 Coins, Seth.
You did?
We did. I have to send you the receipt.
Yes. Promise that never happened.
I color me unimpressed.
Yeah, very.
Foz?
The seating was nice. Interesting.
You like those big, like, padded, you can still that, right? Yeah.
That was probably the best part. I say our drinks were very stout.
Like strong?
Very strong, yes.
Okay.
The food was okay. I had fried ravioli, which they were fine. Nothing amazing. But the vibe in there is a scene.
Yeah, when we were walking in, there was live music, which we knew we were in for a treat.
We were like, oh, maybe we can record in this place. Nope, not going to record here. No. But thanks for the recommendation. It was walkable from the hotel.
Yes, it's like one of the only places that's decent. It's walkable from that cluster there.
Yeah. Foz and I are still debating which hotel's actually closer. I still say the Skybridge is closer because you don't have to cross the intersection to get to the Skybridge.
I would give you that.
So that's my...
So the Skybridge is now an AC, I guess? Right, it's going through. It has gone through a renovation and reflagged.
Surprisingly nice.
Yeah,
I slept fine. You know, solid. Yeah. Anyway, we can talk about new news. AirAsia A220 order.
Yeah.
How many?
150.
Whew.
Lot. Whole lot. It's big order. All A220s. There's the aviation side of it, which is significant. There's also the political side of it, which I found fascinating they actually held a huge ceremony with Tony Fernandez, the Airbus people, and Carney, the Prime Minister of Canada, attended. So yeah, political. Clearly. And then the head of Quebec, whatever, someone from the Montreal area, various educational and industrial cabinet type roles. They made it a huge deal, and it is a big deal. 150 airplanes all being delivered from Canada. So not using the assembly line in the United States in Mobile. So that's a big part of it. And they noted this brings the total order book for the A220 over 1,000 frames, which is not quite too profitable for the product line, but very close is what they've been saying lately. So that's good news. But then a couple other things that were amusing to me. One is Fernandez, you know, always tells a good story and mentioned that he kept wanting, he liked the plane every time he saw it back, even when it was originally a C-series, but just wanted Airbus to make it a little bit longer, just needed it to be a little bit longer. And he's like, and now you've finally done that, so I can buy it, which I don't understand because, to the best of my knowledge, it hasn't been made longer. Like, I believe, my understanding is that the interior of the -300 series is the same as it was all along.
Maybe he means you just didn't have a configuration that fit enough seats.
Well, that is what it is. So part of this is Airbus talked at the Paris Air Show about adding the double overwing exits to allow for increased evac, which lets them put more seats in. This AirAsia will be the launch customer of that configuration. And for what it's worth, there were a lot of people expecting that AirAsia was going to announce the order at the Paris Air Show, which would have made sense given Airbus's announcement, knowing this all now. So maybe that's what he means when he said make it a bit longer, is just that he can get that extra row of seats in. They will be a 160 seat config on that plane.
It's a lot of people on a 220.
And he also mentioned in his presentation that if they bothered to add four or five more rows and build the A220-500, he would expect AirAsia to sign an order for another 150 planes and double the order book. Who knows if they'd actually double it versus converting some and whatever. But yeah, they want this plane to be their mid-size jet, definitely not a regional jet, product, and then 321s basically for higher density routes. And it's interesting how it slides in, and especially if they can get up to 180 or 185 seats on the 500 series, how it slides in to really replace the 319-320.
So I was going to ask this question. What's the economic difference between the 220-500 and the 320s? Like, is it just efficiency in the 220? Like, is that, and Seth's amazing. Bless you, Seth. Is it just economics, or is there something else? Like, why go with the 220-500 over a 320 Neo?
Yeah, I don't know what the operating sort of trip costs would be at that point. I imagine there's some efficiency just on that. A stretch is almost always more efficient than a shrink.
Yeah.
It could also be that there's a huge line for 320s. There's not a huge line for 220s.
Yeah.
Mm.
You can't get a new 320 without some serious luck before, you know, 2032 at this point, I think.
That's backups in Hamburg and Toulouse?
Just the order books are huge. People keep ordering, you know, you get a United ordering 200 planes or an American ordering whatever, like Delta orders 200 planes, AirAsia, Indigo orders 450 planes. Like, the numbers are hard to make work.
Yeah.
Okay. It'll be interesting to see if Pratt & Whitney gets their engines squared away by then.
Yeah. Fernandez did call them out. He's like, I bought thousands of engines from GE. If I had to buy some from Pratt, they'll let me down.
I like that he doesn't pull punches.
Another really funny bits he did is like, so, you know, I really liked the C-Series when I came and saw it here. And he also told the story of being like hungover as hell. And literally, it's like, I was super hungover because Montreal's a great town to visit. But the next morning, I had to go out and do a test flight. He's like, the test flight was fine. I love the plane. But then the next week, Jerome from Airbus shows up with a slide deck in his hand telling me how the C-Series is a terrible plane and it's never going to last and it's not that good and I definitely shouldn't buy it and I should buy A320s instead. And so we didn't buy anything. And then 6 months later, Airbus bought the C-Series. And Jerome, the same man, came back and he's like, and I have both copies of the presentations. I can show them to you. Jerome gives me this slide deck of how the A220 is the best plane ever. It's the best plane ever built. And we have to buy hundreds of them, which, you know, business is business. And I get it. But Airbus and Boeing did a pretty impressive job driving Bombardier's commercial aviation segment out of business, and then Airbus picked them up on the cheap, and that's not great, but you know, it is what it is.
How are they? How is Airbus guaranteeing that it comes from the Canadian side of like the Canadian line? Is like that seems like a logistical nightmare, because if they have slack in Mobile, like you would want to use it, right?
Yes, but if they also right now, I think they also have slack in Mirabel, so that helps.
Yeah,
and you know, you book, no matter what, you're booking aircraft into expected production lines.
Yep. Yes. Anything else you want to talk about AirAsia?
Sorry, just the one other thing in about how it got political also. Fernandez definitely dropped a few lines about how mid-sized countries need to take more, need to demonstrate power more strongly, which he believes Carney has done recently, and I would tend to agree, and how he wants the ACN block, which is like 11 countries from the, I want to say, Philippines across to Thailand, Malaysia, a few others in between. He believes that that block, if it acted well and smartly together, could bring EU equivalent power to the global markets in a way that he would love to see happen. And he's probably right about if they could band together, they could do it. I'm not sure they would make that work, but it was an interesting bit, interesting conversation. And both of them sort of talked politics throughout their speeches, him and Carney. It was decidedly more than an aircraft order.
Did he mention anything about fuel?
He did not.
Okay.
Not significant enough that I remember.
Okay. Yeah.
And unfortunately the YouTube link like died 6 hours after it ended.
No. Just so you can't watch it after the fact?
Can't go watch it again. No. It was just a YouTube live and then it like disappeared.
Alaska and Santa Rosa. There's gonna be an expansion there.
Yeah. Adding a few markets, Phoenix coming in. I don't remember the others.
Boise.
Yeah. It's interesting to me to see Santa Rosa becoming this, like, are we to Hublet stage yet? I mean, it's all regional jets. So it's, or not actually, not all regional jets, but it's mostly regional jets.
So it's Santa Rosa to Phoenix, Salt Lake City, Boise. Those are the two, those are the three. And that starts in November.
Okay.
And I think they're all, I think that actually is regional. It's all regionals. Yeah. It's okay. All E175s.
Is this Cleveland style Hublet yet? Are we there?
I mean, we're close because they fly Portland. They fly Seattle. They fly, I think they fly Bend. And they fly a lot of places out of Santa Rosa.
Yeah.
I was mentioning this to Steven the other day. What's interesting is 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, when Alaska made their big announcement for the titanium check-in and all that stuff, they list San Francisco as a hub, but not Santa Rosa or San Diego.
Not San Diego not being listed as a hub is strange because they have a ton of flights out of there.
So for August 2026, Santa Rosa will have 508 monthly departures to 8 cities. Probably not quite, Bob, and they probably won't route people through it necessarily. But
oh, they do.
I mean, I've managed to route myself through it, but it took some work once.
No, they're actually selling it as a connection
point. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, anytime I look up San Diego, it's like, would you like to go through Santa Rosa? And I'm like, not particularly.
Yeah. But yeah, Orange County and Ontario are new since last year. And then obviously these other three will be new on top of that. So it's definitely growing. I think San Diego is well more than 1,000 monthly or 500 monthly departures.
It's a lot.
San Diego is 3,300 monthly departures, but is also up 50% since last year.
I think where I'm confused by Alaska is that they're growing like Santa Rosa and they're growing San Diego. But some of the stuff that they fly out of San Diego is just strange. Like Las Vegas. Like, why are you going up against Southwest, who flies 6 or 7 of those flights a day?
Well, I think that has to do with the fact that they have a customer base in San Diego that wants to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. I just figure, like, would you route more people through San Diego? I mean, you could, right, from the East Coast or something, but you need more of those flights. This, again, comes back to this problem of, like, But you can pick an egg. But
is
you can
San Diego people. As a San Diego connecting point, or is it O&D traffic, local traffic?
They'll sell it to you as a connection. Like, the thing to keep in mind, right? They have a bunch of Lyft in and out of Hawaii, so they can connect people from Hawaii to Vegas that way.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I don't know timings, but there's a daily to Lithuli, double daily Maui.
There's like 5 flights a day between San Diego and Vegas.
Yeah.
And one of those is on a 330.
Don't do Honolulu?
No, it might be Hawaiian coded. They do.
That's, I would think it would show up in this report. That's super weird. Okay. Oh, I just have to scroll. Sorry. Yeah, triple daily to Honolulu. So that's 6 a day to Hawaii. That's a lot.
Yeah. I just, their strategy, I mean, my flight, I was trying to book one of 3 flights to get to Vegas. All of them were empty. I don't know if that's your flight, Foz, but did yours fill up?
I mean, it was full. Mine was pretty full.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, looking at, you know, they've added 9 airports from San Diego and dropped one in the half year. They dropped Atlanta and they added Denver, Dallas, Honolulu, Oakland, O'Hare, Raleigh, Reno, Santa Barbara, and Tulsa.
I mean, they need something to do with the E-175s in San Diego, so why not Vegas and Santa Barbara? Like, that makes sense.
There's enough people who go from San Diego to Santa Barbara for weekends and stuff. That actually kind of makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, on top of that, they're adding Seattle to Long Beach.
Again. Yeah, this is an interesting one. Double daily.
It's bizarre.
But also, Long Beach is slot controlled by the local authorities for noise reasons. And historically, getting slots there has been challenging, which is also weird because it's like the worst yielding airport in the basin. And airlines love to have service there because it's convenient and the passengers love it. But also, the fares are almost always significantly lower than Orange County or LAX, much less Burbank or Ontario, which are, you know, different markets. But this one opened up. Alaska was not at the top of the list. So Delta returned one slot pair, and Southwest returned 5, I believe. And only Alaska asked for more. There were other airlines, like they keep a waiting list, and Alaska was not first on the waiting list, but Alaska was the only one who asked for slots. And so it got its 2 that it wanted. There are slots available at Long Beach for any airline who asks at this point. Some of the old Southwest ones.
That's interesting. I mean, it's interesting how it's gone from a JetBlue hub to Southwest hub to now people aren't flying there. I think I've only been through there once.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, I've been there a few times. It's a nice airport.
Yeah. It's all outdoor gates, right? Like, it's all.
Yeah.
Apron gates. So I always enjoy that. And then I think, you know, I was telling Foz this last night, Alaska's not doing Portland, Chicago more than twice a day in the summer. They used to be like 3 to maybe 4 times a day. Now it's down to a morning flight and a red eye, which I find interesting, like very strange. So,
yeah.
Their strategy is, it makes me.
Well, I mean, remember that O'Hare is requiring routes to be cut.
Yeah.
The cap.
I mean, that could definitely be it. Yeah. And they just said, we got to keep Seattle or something. So,
yeah.
And maybe they're relying on American feed. That could be part of it as well. So,
yeah. Did you guys talk last week about Alaska finally starting Rome service? They've now got, Europe.
We mentioned it because Foz and I went through the suite check-in,
okay.
Titanium check-in in Seattle, which is nice. But it's marketed as suites, right? Which is only on the 787s. So the open question to us is, if you're going to Narita in business or one of the places served by the 330, do you not get that check-in because it's not branded? Is this going to be like the Polaris problem for Alaska, where if it's not branded as Polaris, you don't get access? Foz rolled his eyes at me.
I would imagine you'd get the premium check-in.
One would hope.
I mean, Foz, especially because it's, yeah.
I mean, I think this is part of Velasco's struggle right now, right? They're trying to figure out all these little quirks and they don't think everything out.
Yeah.
So I think if not today, I think you will get it in the not too distant future.
And I mean, it looks like the Seattle to Rome service is doing well. Delta service has started now as two. So we'll see what fares do. It's pretty pricey, I think. So not cheap.
Yeah.
And then London starts in later this month.
Yeah. So
that should be good.
And Virgin's exiting Seattle, London.
Is Delta taking it over?
I didn't see anything about Delta adding it.
I thought Virgin's exiting Seattle. I saw they were ending Dubai.
I saw something earlier this week that it might not be till the winter season, but they are going to exit Seattle.
Okay.
That's interesting. I thought Seattle was a major hub for them. They said, we have taken the difficult decision to temporarily suspend our services from Seattle for the winter of 2026. We intend to resume daily service in March of 27.
Yeah.
It's very abrupt.
Yeah, so this is fuel price and other challenge, it would seem.
Yeah.
I mean, admittedly, given that it's still months away, who knows what's going to happen. But if it was already a marginal route, even if fuel prices come back down, hard to
justify it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how much lift do we need out of Seattle to London?
In the winter.
It's true. But I mean, some of these airlines only offer seasonal service anyway to Seattle. So some of that lift to Europe is handled by the London stuff. So, and then lastly, Alaska's been doing this weird thing. Foz pointed this out. So Foz, I'll let you explain it. But they've been doing this thing where customers at SFO are being told to go to Oakland and relatively quickly.
Yeah. So imagine you get up in the morning, you've got your day planned out. And halfway through your day, you get a notice from Alaska saying your flight from San Francisco has been moved to Oakland. It's bizarre. I don't know how they're making that, how people are okay with that.
Piece of cake.
Yeah. Sure.
It's like flights are canceled and they're rebooking people out of Oakland instead?
No, they're moving the departure. They're not changing the flight number or anything. They're just saying flight 54, instead of San Francisco, Seattle, it's now Oakland, Seattle. Oh, and by the way, you have to stop at the desk and recheck in, apparently.
Is this tied to San Francisco having some capacity cap challenges this summer?
Yes, and it could be related to that. But apparently, this is not the first time they've done it. There's someone resurrected an old Flyer Talk thread from years ago the other day, and that's where I happened to catch this.
This has happened before?
Yes.
Wow.
Going back to wondering if Alaska really knows how to run an airline.
I mean, if you're already kind of drawing down at San Francisco, sending people over to Oakland is not going to give them a warm and fuzzy about your operation.
No. Right. Like, it's one thing if, like, you're in the city and you are going to take public transportation. It's kind of a wash when, you either go west or you go east. But if you're, like, in the valley and you're planning to fly out of San Francisco, suddenly flying out of Oakland is a really big challenge.
Yeah. Especially if you got like a rental car or something and it turns into a one-way rental. just details. Yeah. Huh. I wonder if we can get more. Maybe we should send a thing out to Alaska and ask what's going on. And then in sad news, it sounds like a Frontier flight has hit a pedestrian at Denver.
This is strange. It happened like at 11 o'clock at night.
And if I understood correctly, it happened like actually during a departure roll on the runway?
Yes.
So this wasn't like someone near a gate by the ramp kind of thing. This was a person like out on the active runway.
Yeah, and unfortunately they were ingested into the engine, caused an engine fire, so there's an evac on the runway as well.
Yeah, just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, at first people were like, well, maybe it was an animal or something, but it does sound like it was an actual person that jumped the fence. And they have not identified the person. So, and it was going, I think it was a Frontier flight to Los Angeles. So it was actually pretty full. It was like 224 passengers and full crew. So, that's pretty awful. Pretty awful. Anything else you guys want to chat about?
Not for me.
No? Seth, anything from you?
No, I'm good.
Okay, we have a lot to talk about for our Patreon supporters. We're going to talk about the demand cliff and recovery in the Middle East, some Spirit-related route changes-ish, and then we're going to talk a little bit about just different buy one, get one kind of points offers related to that Spirit thing. So stick around for that if you're a Patreon supporter. If not, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.